Okay, the title of our lesson was Hospitality, Refreshing the Spirits of Others, which is actually taken from 2 Corinthians, the 7th chapter. And I wanted to read verse 13 to you again, remind you that on this particular occasion, the Apostle Paul is indicating to the Corinthians how he had been encouraged by the fact that they had treated Titus very well. Remember that the first letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthians was a very severe letter with many rebukes and admonitions. Paul was curious. He was concerned about how they would receive it. He sent Titus for the purpose of determining how receptive they had been to the admonitions and corrections that he was writing to them. And Titus was well received by the brethren there. Verse 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 13, he said, "We have been comforted in your comfort, and we rejoiced exceedingly more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all." And so their reception of Titus, reception which was something indicating their devotion, their true sorrow. Earlier in that 7th chapter, the concept of godly sorrow in verse 9 was evident in that they had expressed indignation with regard to their own sin and a desire to prove themselves to be righteous and clear in the matter of his admonitions. And so he was very much comforted, and Titus was refreshed in spirit as a result of their reception of him. So that's where we got the title of that. And we defined hospitality last week as from the Greek philoxenos. The word philo has reference to love or fondness. And again, that aspect of love to where there is a fondness or affection for someone. And the term xenos has reference to a foreigner or a stranger. So this is a fondness or love for strangers. And it is seen in the expression, not merely a profession. In other words, saying I care for or I am fond of strangers, but showing strangers that you have a care and fondness for them by your actions. And so the concept of hospitality is seen in doing for others. And that can certainly be inclusive of brethren, but it is not exclusively in that realm. We're to be hospitable to brethren, certainly, but we're also to be hospitable even to strangers. And we talked a little bit about that in our discussion last week. In fact, the first point that we made is that hospitality is to be shown both toward brethren and strangers. Now, I would like to continue that concept, because the second bullet point under our applications, we have opportunities to share our homes with brethren, preachers of the gospel, the poor, our neighbors, the lost. I use Galatians chapter 6 as the text in reference to that. I would like you to turn there, Galatians chapter 6, and we'll look at verse 10 of the text. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10. So you'll notice in this, and in this particular context, the first few verses, there is an indication of our responsibility to one another as brethren. And then in verse 10, he says, "As we have opportunity, let us do good, especially to those who are of the house of the faith." But you'll notice in that verse 10, it is not only to those who are the house of the faith, but he says, "Let us do good to all." And so we are to be especially mindful of individuals who are Christians with regard to our efforts to do good, to benefit them. But it is not limited only to our brethren. The phrase "do good to all" is under consideration. We understand that preference is to be made with regard to brethren. There is an affinity that we have one for another. We as a family have a responsibility to care for each other and help each other as we can. But we can't become so myopic that we are not aware of the responsibilities that we have beyond our brethren to be helpful and to be hospitable and to be benevolent toward others as well. We have any number of examples, especially with regard to benevolence. The Good Samaritan would be an example of that. the text of James chapter 1 and verse 27, where we are told to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. And the same basic concept is derived here in this particular text. I do believe, and there is some dispute with regard to the extent of the doing good that is mentioned in verse 10. I think that is inclusive not only of spiritual good, but also with regard to acts of physical kindness, inclusive of benevolence and hospitality. I want you to note just a few verses previous in verse 6 of the text. The instruction given there, let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. And we've talked about this on a number of occasions, how that when you have a situation where there is a teacher-student relationship, this is especially, I mean, you know, here I am in a situation where I'm teaching, but with many of you, you could be the one up here teaching. You have sufficient knowledge as well. But there is, within that concept of teacher-student, the idea of one who has knowledge imparting that knowledge to one who is lacking in knowledge. And I think there is an inequity with regard to knowledge that's under consideration in verse 6. So if I have a situation to where I am sharing the gospel with someone who is not familiar with truth, and as a result of that, they are greatly benefiting from what I have to tell them, I'm instructing with them. Well, it's not possible for them to return that teaching in kind. They can't turn around and teach me the Bible, because they don't have the knowledge to teach me the Bible. They are dependent upon receiving information at that point in time. But there are other ways in which they can express their appreciation and be helpful and share. So there are other ways to where they could benefit. And I think that in part, for example, with regard to an evangelist who makes his living and supported in the preaching of the gospel, the monies that are received as wages in that regard would be an example of this. And everybody remembers this. I tell people that this is the verse where I try to get cookies, because I can teach and you can give me cookies in response. But that's kind of the idea of helping others. And hospitality is one way in which that can be expressed. So that is, I think, indicative in part. Now, not exclusively that. You can pray on their behalf. There are many things that you can do of a spiritual nature to benefit others as well. But I think it's inclusive of physical things, which would be inclusive of hospitality. So I think it's right for us to use Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10 in that same context to indicate that doing good to all would be certainly inclusive of hospitality. And so we do, from time to time, have opportunities to share our homes and to express and show hospitality to individuals in addition to our own brethren or the brethren of our own congregation. And when we have opportunity to do that, it would be good for us to avail ourselves and to show that hospitality to others. When that happens, and this is the one point that I do want to emphasize, it is something that is so beneficial to us. I would remind you in Philippians, when the Apostle Paul talked about the support, physical support, that the brethren sent to him by the hands of Epaphroditus, that he was grateful for the support, but he talked about how much good was done for them as a result of the gift that they had sent him, the spiritual good that accrued to them as a response, as a result of their response and hospitality, benevolence shown to him, the support shown to him. Now in Matthew chapter 25, I'd like you to turn there, where Jesus very clearly establishes this as he's talking to his disciples concerning that day of judgment and their responsibilities and the response that God would give or the king would give to each of these individuals. I want to begin in verse 34. I want you to know that the king will say to those on the right hand, this is Matthew 25 and verse 34, the king will say to those on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick and in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. And so again, this idea of hospitality, to show not only hospitality, but benevolence. And I think for our purposes, we can somewhat combine the two terms. Sometimes we're hospitable, not because there is any particular need, but just to express our fondness and love for another. Sometimes there is an actual need there, so benevolence could come into play as well. When that is shown to an individual, Jesus says, if you've done it to the least of these, you have done it to me. And perhaps more importantly for our consideration, as we recognize that such hospitality is shown to others, is shown to the Master himself, is that it, as a result, benefits us in the day of judgment. As he says, well done, and refers to these individuals as those who are on the right hand in the reception of the kingdom. So hospitality is a very wonderful thing as God expresses it. In other words, God sees it as a wonderful thing. We might not necessarily see it as so important, but God certainly does, and we need to develop that same mindset that he had. Questions, comments? Okay, then we get to the fourth and final point, and this is, I think, likewise important. If you will go with me to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4. We want to emphasize that when it comes to hospitality, as it is with so many things that we are obligated to do, it should be that we do those things not from a sense of obligation, but rather because of that fondness of which we spoke. We have emphasized this, I suppose, most often with regard to the call for us to give. We are to give of our means. We are to give as we have been prospered. We are commanded to give, but we also are to give cheerfully. And so, you may have heard this before, that you have the responsibility to give till it hurts, and you have to like it. And so that kind of an idea of God expecting us to have a right and proper attitude in the expression of these obligations is something that's very important. And I think that's borne out in 1 Peter 4 and verse 9 when he says to be hospitable to one another without grumbling or without complaining. And so hospitality is something, again, that should come easy to us. Now, I might ask this question. How is it that we could reach that point to where our expressions of hospitality are done without complaining? How do we develop that mindset? Or what would be the most helpful things in developing such a mindset so that we are happy to be hospitable? Did you not raise your hand? Well, I saw your hand go up. The last Wednesday, people were saying they were. In fact, Bob, you raised your hand. I didn't see you, and I'm sorry. Okay. But you kind of over to the left. Yes, Jerry.
Nose.
He's picking his nose. I'm sorry, Dick. Go ahead, Jerry.
Are we ready?
Yes.
I think with hospitality, you have to start small and grow. I think the more you do it, the more comfortable you become with it.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Of course, when we get into the questions, typically I jump the gun a little bit with regard to that, but that's a good suggestion that he has. You don't have to, okay, I'm going to be hospitable, so let's invite the entire congregation over to our house this, next Sunday night. That's not necessary. But if you start small, have a couple, or perhaps one of the widows or widowers of the congregation, something along those lines, and just express that hospitality, get used to it in small groups and all, because one of the things that can be, with the grumbling and complaining, at least a part of it, one of the things that can make an individual less willing to be hospitable is that feeling of that is too much. You know, in other words, just feeling a bit overwhelmed by those kinds of things. So to practice it in small instances in your home, at least, is one way. I do want to note, and this is basically where I was going with it. We've already alluded to it to a certain extent. But if you have a relationship with your brethren to where there is that fondness of which we spoke. Now, the fondness for strangers is a little bit more difficult, which, of course, is intrinsic in the term hospitality. But it's a generosity to guests is the actual definition. The xeno, philoxenos is the etymology of the word. So it's, you know, we don't want to mix up etymology with definitions, and I think sometimes we can do that. But with regard to a hospitality, especially toward brethren, and of course that's the call here, be hospitable to one another. So he's talking to Christians about being hospitable to other Christians. If you have that relationship and you have developed that fondness, then it's not something that is an imposition. But if there is not that relationship developed, then there may be more of a sense of obligation that is present. I don't want to have them over, but I need to have them over. I don't really get along with them, but this is what God expects of me. You know, that kind of thing is never a good thing. But if you have developed that, the like precious faith that we have, that's a commonality. You have developed a relationship with individuals. You have invested yourself in their lives. You know something about them. You've taken the time to try to grow closer to them. Well, then those kinds of individuals are not merely brethren, but they are friends. In fact, beyond friends, they are family. And, you know, when you have your family over for Thanksgiving dinner, and maybe, you know, old Uncle George is a little bit hard to handle, but for the most part, and I hope there aren't any Uncle Georges here. I picked the name, I thought that there wasn't anybody here. But with regard to that, you know, because it's family, you look forward to it, and you enjoy it, and you appreciate it. Have the opportunity to have your family in your home, and that should be present with regard to your brethren as well. So it should not be from a sense of obligation. Now there's one other point to be made that is similar to this that is taken from Luke chapter 14. So if you'll turn with me there, Luke 14, and beginning in verse 12. Luke 14, verses 12 through 14. This is one of the parables that Jesus gave to his disciples. And I want you to notice, he said, really, we need to go back to verse 7 so that we'll get the context. He told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the best places. And he said to them, when you're invited by anyone to a wedding feast, don't sit down in the best place. When you're invited, go to the least place. And then he can say, verse 10 of the text, friend, go up higher and you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted. Then he said to him who invited him, this is his host, he says, when you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, nor your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. But you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just. Now, by extension, with regard to this particular text, and there are lessons beyond that that he was teaching, but with regard to hospitality, never should there be an invitation extended because you desire to receive an invitation in return. In other words, you are not engaging in the act of hospitality in order to gain a benefit. Now, that's not necessarily the case in all instances. One example would be when an individual who is an underling in a business would invite their boss or the owner of the company to their house and show hospitality to him or her. Because in that case, most commonly the reason for that is not just because you want to have in your home be hospitable, but you're hopeful by so doing that this will make your boss perhaps more interested in promoting you or or to grow that relationship that you might have. But there should be no desire for quid pro quo in this. I get so that I may receive. And that's not the purpose of hospitality. So, in both of these things, hospitality should not be from a sense of obligation, nor to receive the same in return or to be repaid for that hospitality. That's an indication of the concept of selflessness or love that should be behind the act of being hospitable to others. And so it's not just a matter of doing it, it's also having the right attitude when you engage in that activity. Alright? So those are the primary applications. It is to be shown both toward brethren and strangers. Whenever opportunity arises, it is to be shown, because in doing so, it's as we are doing it to the Master Himself. And when it is done, it is to be done from a proper heart, not complaining and not seeking anything in return. And so doing, an individual who is hospitable, active in practicing hospitality, certainly will refresh the spirit of his brethren. And of course, that's one of the good things. When you have an opportunity, we're talking about victory in Jesus and having joy in the midst of trials and tribulations in life. And one of the best things that you can do if someone is suffering and someone is hurting is to have them into your home and to show your love for them by extending to them a meal or a place to stay or something along those lines. It's an expression of love and fondness that is encouraging to your brethren. All right? Questions, comments? Yes, Chris. Well, that's a good question. I appreciate that, because you're trying to make an application of the concept of hospitality. And actually, in question number two, which we'll get to in just a few moments, is there anything that limits your ability to show hospitality? Does it give you a legitimate reason for you to forego it? And how can you overcome the limitations? These are some things that we'll be discussing, and I think I'll have some suggestions that might be helpful in general, and we'll try to apply that to you as well. In a specific thing, I do want to note as we get into the questions, we understand and recognize that not everyone has the same ability to be hospitable. A single individual, for example, might have some limitations that a married couple may not have. A person who is of very frugal means might be limited in ways that individuals that have more money have. With those type of limitations they would not have. Someone who is limited in health. It could be that it's easier for me, as an example, and Debbie to have individuals over to our house because we're 5 minutes away from the church building, so it's pretty simple. Maybe, you know, after a evening service, or you know, now that we're meeting at 5, there's more time on Sunday evening for us to spend together. So that would be something we could do. Whereas someone who lives, you know, 30 minutes away from the building, it might be more difficult for them to be as active with regard to these things. So there are limitations that that each have. And Chris mentioned the one with regard to Kyle. Since we have withdrawn from him, then that would impact her. So what should she do in this particular case? So some of you may have some suggestions in that regard with regard to how she could fulfill her responsibility. So we'll get to that in just a moment. But let's go ahead and start with the first question, so we'll take it in order. And we can spend as much time as we need to with question number two in just a moment. The first question, and it won't take long to get through this, because I was asking that you make a specific list of individuals who would be refreshed by your show of hospitality. You know, it's always my hope that when I hand these out at the beginning of the class that y'all are paying attention to every single lesson, either bringing it with you or having studied it before and answered those questions, because I think it's beneficial. I recognize not everyone does that, but this is an example of why I think it would be beneficial to actually write down, because if you've got it written down, specific individuals, then that would be something that might help you, encourage you to actually show hospitality more often. But we don't want to bring up names in the class. And so what we'll do is talk about some groups, perhaps, that we could. So let's start with brethren. Specific list of types of brethren who would be refreshed by our show of hospitality.
Well, of course, new people.
Okay, new brethren. Brethren who are first, who have recently come to be a part of our congregation. That would be an example. Okay, who else?
People with sickness.
Okay, when you're talking about weak, you're talking about spiritually weak. So those who may be struggling with their faith would be encouraged by a show of hospitality. Jerry also mentioned individuals who are perhaps have physical problems and ailments. And again, in that regard, when we use the term hospitality, remember this: a fondness and a desire to help or be generous to others. Hospitality doesn't require them being at your house. You can show hospitality by going to their house and maybe bringing them a meal or helping them with their housekeeping or mowing their lawn or something along those lines. So that's a good thing as well. Jerry mentioned this evening, and I'm supposing that he counted, but he said that we have nine ladies in our number who are widows now. And so widows and widowers would be another example, because that can be something that leaves an individual with sadness to a certain extent, loneliness. And so such a group would be benefited as well. Let's see if I've got any. I've got three others with regard to brethren that haven't been mentioned. Yes, Jerry? So that again.
Grieving brethren.
Okay, those who are grieving.
Those who
okay.
lost loved
yeah.
ones.
Good, good.
We've been talking about the people who are older. We also have to consider our youth. Because often our youth, we're drawn all over from the Woodlawn, the west side, Ledford. We aren't that far apart. There are many times opportunities arise that we can get the young people together to have good entertainment.
Yeah, and the thing about that is, if you feel like because you are older that you may not have as much in common with the young, you get a group of young people together, and if you give them a place and some pizza, then you can just sit back and not worry about it, because they're going to enjoy themselves and they'll get something out of it. So you don't have to feel overly concerned about that. You can supply them. Pizza helps just about anyone in that regard, but certainly young people.
Percentage one of the comments, every now and then you'll find some people that when they're sick and having particular problems, that they prefer that people not come around or thing it. And when they request that you not do that, then we shouldn't do it. Even though it's a weird thing.
But, yeah, it is.
Frankly, when I'm sick, I just let them be left alone. It's all right to, deal. But I mean, as far as visiting, and of course, sometimes when you're sick, you don't want to pass it on. But I'm just saying that, just like Sister Clemens, and she just told me out of that when she got sick. First time she got sick, she said, "When I get sick, I get mean." And I don't need to be told. And she said, "Remember that."
And we do need to be aware. We talked a little bit about this. That we've got extroverts in our congregation. We've got introverts in our congregation. And so we need to be aware of the fact that different people feel differently in regard to those things. What we're talking about is being available to them. And even if their expressed need is not what we would feel as being needful during difficult times and such, if we can fulfill what they express their need to be. So it may be, "Leave me alone. Okay, we won't come over. Could we share a meal with you? Just bring a meal over, or call the pizza place and pay for it and have them deliver it to you." There are a lot of things that you can do in regard to that, to respect those things, without and still be able to practice the hospitality we're speaking. I, in addition to that, have visiting preachers, just because I got to get that in as a part of, I very much appreciate the brethren, and we have quite a few of our number that are willing to sign their name to this, to the meal list when preachers come in. I appreciate that. But also, traveling Christians, and we don't always have an opportunity. I'll just give an example because it does come up from time to time in our particular house, is that Josh has a group of friends from Lubbock that come this direction for a number of different reasons, and they're faithful Christians down there in Lubbock, and his house isn't big enough, so we always tell them, come over to our house, and you know, the upstairs is yours, and it's a very minor thing. It's not something I'm proud of by any means, because it's just going to waste up there since the kids are not there anymore, but just, you know, the opportunities that you have when your brethren, when their circumstances arise. Sometimes brethren will be somewhat forward about that. We had a meeting that I held in another place. I won't be too specific about it, but we said we'd love to have y'all, you know, in Fort Worth sometime, and about a week later they called and said, we're coming through, can we stay with you? And they were traveling, and they wanted to save money because the hotels are expensive, and I said, sure, didn't know them very well, but I did know them, and they were faithful brethren, and so we have them in our home. So those kinds of things are the things that we're talking about that can be beneficial. So those are the groups that I have with regard to brethren. Yes, sir.
When you talk about visiting preachers on the west side, you usually have visiting preachers in motels. But the benefit of having a preacher in your house for a week is overwhelming. To sit there with a preacher for a week and interact with him and the growth you get from that time, it's just, you can't measure something like that.
Well, I appreciate that. Yes, sir.
I didn't understand what you said about preachers.
When great preachers come in, having a week with them and getting to visit with them and study with them, that can cause a lot of growth.
Of course, I didn't say that long. When I was growing up, we used to have two-week meetings, two mm-hmm. services a day. Wasn't any motels. Preachers stayed in houses. I guess the hardest I ever left in my life was when I went to Irving to a meeting with Bill Cruz, James Cruz, and R.L. Burns was preaching at Grand Prairie at the time, and I can't remember, there's two brothers that was preaching, and one of them was holding that meeting, and we went out and had coffee. I never laughed so much in my life. They got telling stories about places when they stand with people, the different things that happen. Yeah. And sometimes it was really bad. And, I remember thinking about the one guy who said, sat out on the farm, and they got up at 4 o'clock and they cooked his breakfast and put it on the table, and when he got up, it was covered in grease and, everything, and things like that. And I got to thinking, well, having a brother-in-law that was preaching, I asked him, I said, what is your preference, staying in a motel, staying with people? And he said, well, unless it's relatives or somebody like that, I'd rather stay in a motel. And the reason was, they don't feel like they're obligated in a lot of ways, in the fact that they can study, they can set their own time. They do go out and visit and this type of thing. So we ask every preacher that we come here, are you want to stay with somebody or you'd rather have in a motel? And they say, well, motel most of the time. Now, I don't know that when your son comes, he's going to stay.
Yeah, he's going to stay.
When my brother-in-law came, he stayed with us. Yeah. But I was going to say that most preachers, we ask them, we tell them, well, no, we got a place for you to stay for the individual. And 90% of them would rather stay in a motel and go meet individuals to eat and have sit up. One reason they get to rest, they can rest. They don't feel like they're putting people out.
Yeah. In fact, I'll just give a guess from the preacher's point of view, because this is a good point that can be made. Some of you may in the future have men staying with you during a gospel meeting who are preachers. There are several things that a preacher needs. Now, not everyone needs a hypoallergenic home like I do. I'll tell people, I'll stay with anyone, but if you have cats or dogs, let me know so I can drug up before I come, because I've got severe allergies, especially with cats. But besides the allergy problem, I have stayed in, let's say, 30 homes over the years, 28 of those homes I've been put into a spare bedroom, and that's the only place I have to go to prepare, and there's no desk. And so I end up spreading my books and my Bible and my computer and all that over the bed and on my knees doing my prep work each day in study and preparation. People just don't think about that, that a preacher needs a place to study. A nice chair and a small desk is all that you need necessarily, but there needs to be that place, and it needs to be something that is isolated, because I'll just use a kitchen table. Well, it doesn't work. It really doesn't. You need a place where you can study, and you need a couple of hours a day before it's time to go wherever you're going to be going before services, to where you can do some prep work. And that's just to be successful in holding that meeting. It has nothing to do with getting some work done before you go back, because you've got to preach Sunday back in your home congregation. So there needs to be those kinds of things understood. And I think perhaps it's preacher's fault in that regard too, that we don't, that I don't tell the home people that, hey, if y'all are going to have him, this is what's needed. And I'll tell you another thing. If you say, okay, we're going to have our singing at 7 o'clock, well, let's meet at 5:30 out to eat or something, and it's a slow restaurant and all, you're sitting there nice and visiting, but he's thinking, I've got to get there in time to get ready and to visit with the other brethren, and I'm looking and it's late, and I've actually been late to the start of services before because I didn't know how to get there, and I was dependent upon my guides and my host to get me there, and they were just not all that concerned with being on time. And that's frustrating for a preacher. So those are the kinds of things. When you're being hospitable, and that's just with preachers, but this is the same idea as we talked about with regard to someone who's ill and they don't want visitors. If you're trying to be hospitable, the golden rule comes into mind. You treat others the way you would like to be treated. So you ask them about the things that are needful or the things that would be helpful or the things that would benefit them, and strive to fulfill those things because you're showing fondness or love for your guests. And they aren't always like you are. And so there are some of those differences that if you can help them in that regard, it's something that's an encouragement to them, rather than being stressed, which it can be otherwise. So anyway, that's just a couple of possibilities in that regard. Okay, now with regard to others, I do want to note, not just brethren, but others with regard to hospitality, a couple of things to note. That benevolence is a part of this, and so there will be times when you will be able to feed or house or clothe someone who has a need. So keep that in mind. When you come across individuals who have a need, just as the Good Samaritan, you have an opportunity to help. Sometimes hospitality is a way in which that can be accomplished. It is very helpful when an individual is showing a mind that is amenable to the gospel. That is, he is desiring of hearing the truth. That if he sees in you an expression of love, in other words, he sees, as indicated there in Matthew chapter 25, you did it to the least of these, you've done it to me. A person who is seeking to benefit others and showing and expressing the love of Christ in their daily lives, that's something that will be beneficial to him as he's seeking to make that commitment to become a child of God. So hospitality shown to individuals that you are studying with or that you may have an opportunity to study with, it's something that from time to time can actually make the difference. If they see him in your life, by the expression of that hospitality, they're going to be more receptive to the message itself. And then thirdly, again, keeping in mind the fact that there are the poor that are always with us, and from time to time there is that possibility of showing hospitality. Okay, so that's the group. Anybody else before we get into question two?
I'll say one more thing.
Sure.
You talk about, not necessarily hospitality, but sometimes we have people in the congregation that have needs, but they don't want to tell anybody about it. And it may be physical, it may be spiritual, or it might be deal. But if we don't know about it, we can't help.
Good. All right, question number two, is there anything that limits your ability to show hospitality? Does this give legitimate reason for you to forego showing hospitality, and how can you overcome the limitations? So let's kind of take that second question. We recognize, again, that not everyone has the same ability in regard to these matters. But can we use a limit that we might have as an excuse not to do something that God expects us to do? Can it be, and just to go beyond that, can it be that in certain circumstances or situations that, okay, it doesn't apply to us simply because of our limitations? Not everybody speaks once.
Well, physical limitation, I mean, you just may not be, your health may not permit it. There may not be anything you can do about your health.
Okay. So you mentioned Doris Clements as an example. Her Parkinson's increased. She is in ill health. She can't get out. It'd be very, very difficult for her to fulfill those things. And so we do want to give that caveat and let everyone understand that God only requires of you what you are capable of doing. We'll give you an example. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. So assembling for the purpose of worshiping God is something He requires of all Christians. However, there are sometimes circumstances, health specifically, that would preclude an individual having the physical ability to fulfill that responsibility. And when that happens, then that is not required. And so that would be an example of what we would get. So it may be that an extreme is reached where a person simply is incapable of doing that because of their circumstances in life. What I ask is that we do not allow ourselves to use a limitation that we might have as an excuse. Now, I'm not going to do it because of this, that, and the other, when in fact there are ways in which we could overcome those limitations and still do, at least to one degree or another, the work that God would like for us to do. Yes, Brad?
There have been occasions when some of the ladies here wanted to be hospitable. They felt like they got too far away, or the house was maybe smaller than they wanted to be. They had that the gathering that they wanted to host at your house or our house, or sure. You know, they found a way to still be hospitable. Still do that. Use that opportunity to be hospitable.
Good.
There's other ways to do that.
That's a good example. And let me give you another. We're talking about someone who's physically maybe ill, not able to. There have been a number of times when I've been out preaching to where I have gone to dinner with the preacher and his wife, but the meal was paid for by someone who couldn't. And yet, despite the fact that they couldn't be there, they nevertheless wanted to show hospitality, so they said, I've got the money. This meal is going to be paid for by me. And so, you know, I'm eating with the preacher and enjoying the visit, but I recognize that the woman is expressing that. Yes, Justin.
Back in Arkansas, there's this lady, she's in a nursing home, and she couldn't see good enough to drive anymore. And so somebody always had to go pick her up and bring her to worship service because she could still, you know, walk around and whatnot. And she would oftentimes go back to that person's house with them, make sure I'm reading this right, and cook their own food for them. So they go back to their house, and she hasn't brought any food with her or anything, but she can still cook, and she would go into their kitchen and cook them a meal and prepare them a meal. And she hadn't brought, you know, she had done any of the driving, she hadn't brought any of the food, but she did the legwork.
Yeah, so there's the effort in that regard would be. So, yes, Dick.
So you talk about those that have infirmities, like being shut-ins at home. If you go to visit them, and they're some of them never hospitable, you know, you would say they can't get out, you know.
Yeah.
They'll have to see you, and they'll do everything like that. And so, even though there are certain limitations,
whenever someone comes to you, there is that possible. Is that the second one? No. I'm sorry. Okay, one other thing that I want to mention, and it might be helpful to Chris as well, is again, just, I mean, I'll say this again. Cookies are good. I mean, it's, I'm being kind of silly and all, but there are certain things that, for example, Chris or others could do to where, okay, I want to do something nice for one of my brethren, and just a baked good or just a just a card, you know, those kinds of things where I'm showing that and being an encouragement, even though I may not be able to do some of these other things, I can still show my fondness for my brethren. And that's truly what the basis of hospitality is. Okay? Appreciate very much everyone's kind attention. And I tell you what, we pretty much covered everything, even the third question. So we'll pick up with lesson number 16 in our study next week. Okay? We'll be talking about the Apostle Paul.